Gopi Janabal Laba Irbardhari. Gopi Janabalaba Irbardhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Jira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Janabala Ba Girit Bharadhari. Jai Gopi Janabala Ba Girit Bharadhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shaim Shabam Sabadada Jigatar. Stotes at the Sisimad. AC Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Shila Prabhupada. Jayam Vishnu Pavan Sabadada Jigatar. Stotes at the Sisimad Bhakti Siddhanta Sasi Thakur Prabhupada. Go Premanandi. This is prose. What do you usually do about it? I just chant it. Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 24, the subterranean heavenly planets, text 25, which is prose Sanskrit, so I'll just chant that and we will go to the word for word. Yashyanu dasham evasmat pitamaha kila vavre nat tu swap patriyam yat uta kuto bhayam padam diyamanam bhagavata padam iti. Bhagavato padete kalu swa pitari. Yasya, of whom? The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Anudasyam, the service. Eva, certainly. Asmat, our. Pitamaha, grandfather. Kila, indeed. Vavre, accepted. Na, not. Tu, but. Swa, own. Pitriyam, paternal property. Yat, which. Uta, certainly. Akuta, bhayam, fearlessness. Padam, position. Diyamanam, being offered. Bhagavata, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Padam, other. Iti, thus. Bhagavata, by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Upadate, when killed. Kalu, indeed. Swapittari, his own father. Bali Maharaj said, my grandfather, Pallad Maharaja, is the only person who understood his own self-interest. Upon the death of Prahlad's father, Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrisimhadev wanted to offer Prahlad his father's kingdom and even wanted to grant him liberation from material bondage. But Prahlad accepted neither. Liberation and material opulence, he thought, are obstacles to devotional service, and therefore such gifts from the Supreme Personality of Godhead are not his actual mercy. Consequently, instead of accepting the results of karma and jnana, Pallada Maharaja simply begged the Lord for engagement in the service of his servant. Purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has instructed that an unalloyed devotee should consider himself a servant of the servant of the servant of the Supreme Lord. Gopi Bhattu Bhattakamalayor Dasa Dasa Nudasa. In Vaishnava philosophy, one should not even become a direct servant. Prahlada Maharaj was offered all the blessings of an opulent position in the material world, and even the liberation of merging into Brahman. But he refused all this. He simply wanted to engage in the service of the servant of the servant of the Lord. Therefore, Bali Maharaj said that because his grandfather, Prahlada Maharaj, had rejected the blessings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of material opulence and liberation from material bondage, he truly understood his self-interest. Om Ajnanatirmidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurmilitang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Everyone would like to feel that they are acting according to their self-interest. Material selfishness is the basis of material existence. By forgetting our status as eternal servants of Krishna, we generate a false identity for ourselves, and we become Krishna's competitor in our mind. How is that? As I often point out, in order to fulfill our quest for happiness, we must control, whether in a gross way or sometimes just a subtly obvious way, and sometimes imperceptible way. But we should know the way this material world is constructed is that as soon as you try for material happiness, you have to do a bit of control. And so both these positions, which are actually one, the controlling propensity and the enjoying propensity, are one package. Both of these are imitation of Krishna. And as we advance in spiritual life more and more, we can see ourselves as just that, imitators of Krishna. So what is our real self-interest? Prahlada Maharaj has made his famous statement, Nateva du swartha gatim hi vishnum darashaye bahir. Artamanina. They don't know that their real self-interest, their real goal, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They seek false value in the externals. And what is the proof of that? Hiranyakashipu mentioned in this purport before trying to kill Prahlad. And that's right before the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev from the pillar. Hiranyakashipu criticized his son vehemently and angrily and enviously. Hey, Durvi Nita Mandatma, Kula Beda Karadama. Prahlad, you are so unfortunate. You are so dumb, Mandatma. You are the disruptor of the family tradition and the lowest of human beings. So why, among other reasons, was Hiranyakashipu speaking like this? Everything was crystal clear to Hiranyakashipu's perception. You, my son, were meant to inherit from me the entire universe. But you've blown it. You've lost it all. How stupid can someone be? You don't know your real self-interest. You've lost your inheritance, the entire universe. Not only that, but I'm going to have to kill you. How stupid can you be, Prahlad? How could you have chosen to support Vishnu, our mortal enemy? We fight Vishnu to the finish. And then you hear in the purport that upon the death of Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrisimhadeva offered Prahlad so many options of material benediction, liberation, pushing Prahlad again and again. Prahlad, it is my pastime to fulfill all desires. What do you want, Prahlad? Take material opulence, take liberation. And again, Sanatana Goswami explains in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, again and again, Prahlad would say, please, no, no, no. So the question always arises, why was Lord Nrisimhadev pushing Prahlad so much? Take it, Prahlad, take it. I often explain that in many countries in this world, there's a legal term called entrapment, in which the law enforcement agents, the police, undercover, they try to push someone to commit a crime, and then, aha! There was just a case in the USA where the FBI wanted to catch anyone who thought about being a terrorist. Even by provoking them, don't you want to be a terrorist? Don't you want to commit a crime? Undercover police would do that with their informants. And they would do this to poor persons. Here's a lot of money. Don't you want to blow up a synagogue? And so then, often when these cases go to court, the judge throws it out. Like, this is called entrapment. You pushed that person so enthusiastically, and then the person agreed to commit a crime. But he wouldn't have done it without your pushing so much. So you could say, Lord Nrisimhadeva is doing this to Prahlad. Prahlad, come on, Prahlad. Think about your self-interest, material opulence, more than even what your father had. Oh, you don't want material opulence? Liberation into the Brahman effulgence. Freedom from all material suffering. And it's interesting, Prahlad's response. He said, basically, in so many words, he said, my dear Lord, you know my family background. Born in a dynasty of Asuras. Please don't tempt me. I have these demoniac inclinations due to my family heritage. Please don't tempt me. Even liberation, Prahlad wouldn't accept. Now, what about Bali Maharaj? When he offered to give Vamanadeva villages, girls to marry, wealth, cows, whatever you want, name it. You know what Vamanadeva said. 3 steps of land. And what was Bali Maharaj's response? Because it's Bali Maharaj in this verse who's talking about his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. Bali Maharaj's response was, you don't know your self-interest. Don't you understand what I can give you? Think about it, Prahlad. Excuse me. Think about it, Vamanadeva, my little Brahmana boy. You've just spoken words of wisdom, I agree. Very eloquent words about simple living and high thinking and how material indulgence will not satisfy you. You've just spoken that, and I agree. But at the same time, my little boy, we have to be pragmatic. We have to be practical. You don't know your self-interest. You're inexperienced. So again, we see this issue of self-interest. And of course, Vomita Dave gave that answer that someone who's not satisfied with possessing three steps of land won't be satisfied if he possesses the whole universe. Watch it, you're about to lose it. So what is our self-interest? How can service to Krishna be our self-interest? It seems like an artificial imposition. Our self-interest is to live in this world and enjoy as much as possible and help a few others sometimes. But our main program is how to be happy. This is the goal that so-called Western civilization has spread all over the world. Think of your own happiness and how you're going to get it, especially since everyone else is happy and not you. This is social comparison, the plague, that you can't be satisfied with yourself because you're always looking around, whether with your eyes or on Facebook or whatever, what do the others have? I should have that too. So because of this plague, this social comparison, you can't be peaceful. But you're goaded constantly in a consumer society, and everyone wants to imitate a consumer society. Whether they can do it or not, that's the gold standard that we must all strive for. But no one can ever be satisfied in a consumer society. But they don't tell you that. Why are you not satisfied even though you tried so hard? It's because you need to try harder and get more. That's the solution. So here are personalities, Mahajanas, like Bali Maharaj, Pallad Maharaj, and then Lord Vamanadeva in his reply to Bali Maharaj. Here you're seeing a completely different vision for the fundamentals of society. You can't be satisfied materially. But because of social comparison, among other things, besides our own uncontrolled desires, then we are affected by what happens around us. Whether east, west, north, south, there may be some variations of slight difference. One devotee here in Bart was telling me, Maharaj, here's the difference between the east and the west. In the West, you do whatever you want to do and don't care what anyone thinks. And in India, you're always wondering, what are they thinking of me? What is their perception? But ultimately, the bottom line is the same. How can we be happy and enjoy? In the West, we become happy and we enjoy just by our own individualistic, hedonistic endeavors for sense gratification. And perhaps in India, you enjoy by others think so wonderfully of me. Look at my title. Look at my position. Look at the family line I'm part of. Caste Brahmana. Another way to look at the difference between the East and the West. Many years ago, when I was speaking at Chaupati Temple, I explained the concept of Kama Bindu and Kama Sindhu. So in the West, you have the Kama Sindhu, the ocean of lust. And the idea is plunge into that ocean and drown. And that's ecstasy. That's perfection. In India, although it's changing so quickly, in India, it's Kama Bindu. One drop, and one drop, and another drop, and another drop. Of course, things are changing very quickly. The problem with those who seek the Kama Bindu, the drop of lust, and then another drop. They look around and see, wait a minute, in the West, there's the Kama Bindu, the ocean of lust. Why just one drop here that we're having here? One drop, then one drop. Let's drown in the ocean. That way we'll be happy, just like they're happy in America and Europe. So this chapter of Bhagavatam is very interesting, this 24th chapter, because it combines two extraordinary things. Bilaswarga, the imitation heavenly planets, which are actually the lower planetary system. And this chapter presents the prema of Bali Maharaj, who then points to his grandfather, Prahlad Maharaj. So you get to see two different worlds all in this one chapter. Bilaswarga, the lower planetary system, reminds you of the world today in terms of what everyone's aspiring for. Bilaswarga has some opulences that are more than what the demigods have in the heavenly planets, but they are completely ignorant. They have no idea of the passing of time. They can't even see the difference between day and night because there's no sunshine down there. The illumination comes from jewels on the hoods of serpents. So there's just constant illumination and no fear of old age, disease, and death, except they know. We don't know when, but sometimes the Sudarshan chakra enters into these planetary systems, and that's the end. They don't think about death. They don't think about old age. They don't think about disease. Just nonstop sense gratification. What would a person today think about that? Oh, that's not the lower planetary system. That is the ultimate. Someone was telling me about one famous TV show. I didn't see it, but they told me. Yadu Bar Prabhu would remember Twilight Zone. He's a filmmaker, so he has to know all these things. So, the show presented a mobster, a gangster. What do you call them here in India? Gundas. So, this was a Gunda leader. And he was successful Gunda leader. But then he died. And he went to a place that for sure was heaven. And there he had all the power, all the sensual indulgence, all the wealth he wanted. And so he, of course, thought, this is the greatest. I was a mobster. I was a Gunda. I mean, look at what I'm getting after death. But what happened? After a while, he became very restless and bored. Same old, same thing over and over again. And so he asked the supervisors of that realm, you know, I've had it all. Before I died, and now after death, all the sensuality, all the money, all the power. I can be fully greedy, fully lusty, fully envious. I've been doing that. Here, where I am. I'm getting bored, though. You know, he said, I like to see what hell is like. And the attendants told him, this is hell. You're dissatisfied. You have it all, and still you're now lamenting, you're bored, you're restless. This is hell. So in Bilaswarga, there is the Kama Bindu, the ocean of lust. But there's no fear that it's going to end. There's no, it's the essence. The Milaswarga is the essence of ignorance is bliss, supposedly. Remember in the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, the verse comes up that there are only two kinds of people that can be happy in this world. The first kind is the enlightened being who knows they are not the body, who understands the difference between spirit and matter and has realization of that. That kind of person can be happy. The other kind of person who can be happy is the complete materialistic fool, the muda, who works hard just for a temporary indulgence, temporary pleasure, and thinks that's all there is to life, working and making merry and enjoying the senses and working more, and that's it. That's life. That kind of person can seem to be happy. And what is the conclusion of Vidura and Maitreya? Everyone else in between these two poles must be anxiety, must suffer a bit. Why? You're not smart enough to be an enlightened being, and you're not dumb enough to be a muda. So you have to be in a bit in anxiety. Obviously, the solution is that those in the middle have to make progress toward becoming an enlightened being. But you don't want to so-called make progress going the other way to the complete materialistic fool, the eat, drink, sleep, and be merry type. So Bilaswarga has the complete fools. And they think this is the greatest. Except we've heard sometimes this Sudarsan chakra sweeps through our planetary systems. Anyway, let us focus on enjoying. And that's what especially the Western world, which is now covering the whole world with these conceptions, even affecting India, that's what they think. The goal of life is to acquire, to purchase, to buy, and to be happy with your body and take intoxication to make your mind peaceful. That's civilization. And the last thing you want to do is to think it's going to end. Your happiness, your sensual indulgence is going to end. Don't think like that. This is the Divyagyan being taught. I know. I took one online course at my alma mater, Yale University. The course was on happiness. So the course started out being offered by the psychology department for, they thought, maybe 50 students will sign up. But so many students started signing up to learn about happiness that they kept having to move the course from a small classroom to a bigger classroom to a lecture hall. By the time they finished enrollment for the course, 1,000 students had signed up to learn how to be happy. 1/4 of the student body. 4 years. 1/4 of the entire enrollment for the 4 years signed up for the course, how to be happy. So they had to have the course in a big concert hall. So I tuned into the course. I could do that, so I tuned in. And I heard the sacred principles being propounded. This is one of the most elitist institutions in the world, and this is what they're teaching. The art of savoring. They call it that, savoring. That when you have some indulgence, no matter what it is, you just lock yourself in to that moment with your mind. Pick up an apple and just and you focus 100%. Of course, when we pick up an apple and eat it, we're thinking, Krishna's the taste of the water. Krishna's the taste of the fruit. Krishna's the original fragrance of the earth. But no, when you pick up the apple, just focus on every sensation that you're feeling. Your tongue, your lips, even the sound of biting into the apple. Don't deviate from that concentration. And the last thing you should do is think that this is going to end. Don't do that. This is the high knowledge. This is a siddhanta now. Don't think it's going to end. You have to lock in. And then when you finish the apple, all right, it seems to have ended, but you can prolong the happiness a few moments by savoring. Okay, I finished the apple. You may criticize, you Hare Krishnas will criticize, the apple is finished, your enjoyment is finished. No, you can prolong it for a few moments by samadhi, smaranam. Ooh, that was so good. Oh, yes. And that will stretch out your happiness. Even if it's just a little bit. Still, they said, the teacher was saying, this is victory. Not only should you engage in smadhanam, you finish your sensual indulgence, and then you just think about it. Oh, yes, that was so wonderful. Yes, it was everything everyone told me would be, which is a lie. But anyway, you don't think like a devotee. You have to think in the most intelligent way, which we call the way of the mudhas. There was nothing like that. Oh, it's everything they told me it was going to be. And then if you can, pull out your smartphone and what? Take a photo. Even better is a video clip, Instagram. And that helps you to savor. Don't you understand? That helps the smadhanam. But don't pull your camera out, your phone out, too quickly in the midst of your enjoyment, because that could upset your enjoyment. These are the tips, the very brilliant tips they're giving you. I'm serious. I listen. One of the most popular professors in the USA now, glorified in all the media, and this is what she's teaching. So not only do you exercise smadhanam, oh, that magic moment, and if you can, take a photo. You should also physically express your exuberation, your thrill, your happiness by just jumping. Ah, that was so good. Physically express it. And that helps the memory to remain thick. Not only that, you find someone to tell about it. And that helps preserve the whole remembrance. Do you know what I just did? It was so wonderful. And this way you can prolong the happiness. And even though that smadhanam is going to end, that remembrance is going to end, still you have become victorious. You've prolonged it by even 15 minutes. Isn't that glorious? So if you want to know the academic terms, you're dealing with what's called the hedonic cycle. Hedonic, like from hedonistic. That, or you call it hedonic adaptation. Whatever happiness that you encounter, you're going to become accustomed to it. The thrill is going to go away. It's going to fade away. So how to conquer this hedonic adaptation, this hedonistic problem that the magic moment always fades. See, on Bilaswarga, they don't think about it, and that's considered an advancement. But in the middle planetary system here on Earth, we have the ability to discriminate a bit. We think about, oh, this is going to end. Oh, this is actually not happening like what everyone said it would be. But in Bilaswarga, you don't think like that. You're totally ignorant. So from the Western point of view, that would be considered the heavenly planets. Wonderful. No thinking, just indulging. So there's this, you can picture a graph in your mind. And on the graph, there's a line that starts out high and then plunges. So that's hedonic adaptation. That something tastes so fresh, so you're high on the graph, but then sooner or later the plunge comes. So these acharyas of material indulgence, they're saying if we can just prolong your stay at the top of the graph, then that is the greatest achievement in society. We've given you victory. You've prolonged your awareness of material enjoyment for a few more minutes. Isn't that something? Isn't that great? You don't agree. So the Bilaswarga, you don't have to take a course. You just have no awareness that anything is going to end. You don't see the difference between day and night because there's no sunlight there. In this same chapter, describing the subterranean heavenly planets, you have the glorification of the bhakti of Bali Maharaj, who is explaining that he was not making a trade with Vamanadev. Okay, I'll give you the whole universe. I'll give you myself because you have no place for your second step. I'll give you myself because Bali Maharaj was reasoning, the possessor of the wealth is greater than the wealth. You've taken all the wealth with two steps, but what about me? Put your third step on my head. So Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out that Bali Maharaj was not calculating when he did that. Okay, I give the whole universe to Vamanadev, and what do I get in return? He was not thinking. He was making an exchange of prema, pure love. But a person with material motivation could think otherwise. Well, look, Bali Maharaj came out very good in this transaction. This is good business. So in the purports, you heard how Bali Maharaj was criticizing Indra. Indra could have had this same opportunity to render pure devotional service. What did Indra do when he saw Vamanadev? He sent Vamanadev to me to confiscate the universe. Indra could have taken advantage of the presence of Vamanadev and asked for pure devotion. But he didn't do it. And Indra is supposed to be the disciple of who? Brihaspati. So Bali Maharaj is saying, Brihaspati didn't instruct his student properly. So Indra had his opportunity. He had the darshan of Sri Vamanadev. He could have asked for pure devotion. Instead, he asked Vamanadev to come to me and trick me into giving the whole universe. Obviously, Indra is unintelligent. And so Bali Maharaj is explaining that I didn't give up all the three worlds to get the position I have now. I'm on Sutala, and the Lord is my doorman. He's at the door of my residence. He's like a member of my family. He's watching at the door. I didn't do what I did to get that. This is just the reciprocation of the Supreme Personality God with his devotees, a reciprocation based on pure love. So we could describe Lord Shiva speaking about Bali Maharaj. Because Lord Shiva, in talking to Narada Muni in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Lord Shiva is going to say that whatever glory happened to Bali Maharaj was the Lord's reciprocation with Prahlad Maharaj. Because Bali Maharaj is Prahlad's grandson, therefore such mercy came upon Bali Maharaj. So Narada Muni has been talking with Lord Shiva about where is the greatest devotee? Who is the greatest devotee? And at that point, the discussion is about Mahalakshmi, the eternal consort of Narayan, always seated on the chest of Narayan. So at that point, in his quest to find the greatest devotee, Narada Muni is focused on Mahalakshmi. And he's presenting the glories of Mahalakshmi to Lord Shiva. And what does Lord Shiva say? I can't speak too loudly. I have to lower my voice. Because if my wife, Parvati, hears that there could be someone more dear to the Lord than Mahalakshmi, she'll be angry at me. So even Lord Shiva has to take these considerations. I have to lower my voice. Let me whisper in your ear. I don't want Parvati to become angry. That won't be good for her because she'll be angry with me and you, Narada Muni. So she can't hear that I'm going to explain there's someone more dear to the Lord than Mahalakshmi. And also I have to speak softly because if I get going glorifying this person, I'll be lost in ecstasy. So that's the other reason. I have to speak softly and carefully. So Lord Shiva presented Prahlad. And he presented Bali Maharaj. And he presented even Banasura. Banasura is the great-grandson of Prahlad. So Lord Shiva said that, look what Bali did. There are different views you could have of what happened to Bali Maharaj when he lost all the three worlds. First of all, Bali Maharaj transgressed the cosmic system. He was sending demons up from the lower planetary system to live in the heavenly planets. This is a cosmic disturbance. That's number one. Number two, he disobeyed his guru, Shukracharya. Regardless of what you think about that, still, it's true. Bali Maharaj disregarded Shukracharya. So that's his second problem. Number three, he didn't fulfill his promise to Vamanadeva. He ran out of property. Nevertheless, in spite of these three offenses, look at the mercy he's received, that the Supreme Lord became his doorman. That is because of Prahlad Maharaj. That is because of the mercy of Prahlad, who is Bali's grandfather. And so Lord Shiva also pointed out, all right, you may think that, look, you're giving all the credit to Prahlad, but didn't Prahlad give pure bhakti to Bali Maharaj, so therefore Bali Maharaj gets some credit for acting with pure bhakti, even though the pure bhakti came from Prahlad? So Lord Shiva says, what about this? Banasura, an even more graphic, dramatic example. Look what Banasura did. He's from a devotional family, a bhakti line. Great-grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. Yet he became demoniac. He arrested the grandson of Krishna in Dwarka. He arrested Aniruddha. And he wanted to fight with his own benefactor, Lord Shiva. I can't do anything with my 1,000 arms. You're the only one who could be a worthy opponent. Can I fight you? So he offended his benefactor, Lord Shiva. And he even fought with Krishna. So Lord Shiva himself is saying, don't think that I was able to stop Krishna from finishing off Banasura. Don't think it's because of me and my intervention as Lord Shiva to stop Krishna from killing Banasura. No, it's because Banasura is the great-grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. So in other words, Lord Shiva is saying, if you're not convinced about the example of Bali Maharaj, you must become convinced by the example of Banasura. Because of Prahlad Maharaj, the great-grandfather, Krishna cut off all of Banasura's arms and left him with four and gave him the benediction that you'll be the eternal associate of Lord Shiva. That's all because of Prahlad. And remember, Hiranyakashipu says Prahlad doesn't know his real self-interest. And today you see, destroying the world is the notion that we know our self-interest. Make money and enjoy. The more money, the better, the more enjoyment you'll have. Meanwhile, human beings are destroying the earth. Even if they're successful, which from the Vedic point of view is not possible, even if they're successful to go to another planet and live, what do you think they're going to do there? They've wrecked one planet. If they go to another, they'll wreck that one too. Just last year alone, in 1 year, was spent by the 9 nuclear powers in the world. In 1 year, they spent $83 billion on nuclear weapons. In 1 year. Now just think what you could do here at Govardhan Echo Village with 1/83rd of that amount. $83 billion U.S. dollars in just one year now. They call it upgrading the nuclear arsenal, making it safer. Where is civilization? So we need to hear this information from Srimad Bhagavatam. The information is often beyond the range of our senses. Who here has seen the subterranean heavenly planets? You can only know it by hearing. And Bali Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, these Mahajanas being cited, they seem so far from us. But Bhagavatam brings it all right under our nose, so to speak. So this is, as I said, a very interesting chapter. It combines the depths of ignorance with the glories of the greatest bhaktas. So Bali Maharaj wants you to remember that I didn't give up the whole universe just to get what I got in return. The Lord as my doorman on Sutala. No, I was just making an offering of prema. All right, any questions, comments? Yadubar Prabhu, any comments?
Thank you, Maharaj. Thank you very much for a wonderful class. Very learned and quoting from Shastra and realization of these difficult times where, in the name of enjoyment, we're ruining everything. Yeah. Please continue lecturing as much as possible. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Dandavat Pranam. Maharaj, about the Vaman Dev's pastime, So Pali Maharaj knew, he was instructed by his spiritual master that be careful, he is Vishnu. So, and he did not listen to him. And then, knowing that he is Vishnu, and then he asked for three steps. At that time, Bali Maharaj gave an answer which is not fitting in the way I see, because he knew he is Vishnu, and he could have participated in his pastime. Okay, I can give three steps. But then he said that you could go, you are a small child, you could have asked for the villages, you could ask for the horses. So was he just trying to facilitate or take part in the pastime of Lord? Because that question is not fitting in his understanding about Maharaj, about his understanding of things.
Okay, Shukracharya said he's Vishnu, but in any case, why can't I give three steps of land? That's all he wants, okay, what can I do? He's obviously inexperienced. But anyway, Shukracharya says he's Vishnu. Okay, he may be Vishnu, but he asked for three steps of land. I'll give him three steps of land. What is the difficulty?
Then he thought that he's not Vishnu then, at that time, is it? Because he could also...
He may be Vishnu, he may not. Shukracharya says he is and says I should be careful. Anyway, he's asking for three steps of land. So I'll give three steps of land. I'm fulfilling his request. What's the difficulty?
So that surrender to Lord Vamandev came to him when he saw the Virat Roop that time?
He fulfilled Vamanadeva's request. That's the important point. Don't lose sight of that. He fulfilled Vamanadeva's request, and then he saw what happened. Shukracharya said, don't give him what he wants. He's Vishnu. There won't be any good coming out of this. But Bali Maharaj thought, three steps of land. And but what Shukadeva Goswami is saying in this chapter is that Bali Maharaj actually was not calculating. Three steps of land, and then what do I get in return? Three steps of land, such a beautiful Brahmana boy. Just, you know. Let it happen. Beautiful Brahmana boy, Vishnu, okay, three steps of land, I give. So he wasn't calculating. That's what Shukadeva Goswami is explaining in this chapter. Not that I give the three steps and it's Vishnu. Oh, I'm going to cash in big. Wasn't thinking that. So Shukadeva Goswami is pointing out that the layer underneath it all was Bali Maharaj's praying. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you. Just something you mentioned about being practical among the conversation. And I have some confusion about how does this apply. Is being practical, in one sense, taking responsibility for spreading the mission of Lord Chaitanya, or is being practical engaging in the angas of bhakti, shravanam, kirtanam, or a mixture of both? I know it's I have some confusion about.
Krishna says, surrender to me. You know that. Krishna, as Lord Chaitanya, says the same thing. Wherever you go, whomever you meet, teach the science of Krishna. That's the same as Krishna saying, surrender to me. When you grasp that, then everything becomes clear. Then you see the practicality. Lord Chaitanya is saying the same thing as Krishna is saying. There's Mataji behind you.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. So, Maharaj, you're describing the concept of, you know, East and West, with the attitude of ease, you know, caring for, you know, not caring, you know, hearing everything, you know, trying to, and you said Westerns are that they don't care for anything. And then the Easterns are the one who keep worrying and...
What are others thinking of me?
Yes, what is that?
What is my social worth?
Yeah, so in our spiritual life, we have so many challenges, right? It can be a challenge of philosophy. It can be a challenge of attitude, rules, regulation. Now, as a devotee, how do we draw a line of being careless and say, I don't care, or also be worried, this is what Prabhupada wanted us to do?
Can you give an example, please?
There is a, maybe it's not a, because you are asking, I'm just giving an example. We have a, you know, dressing sense. We have a dress code.
Right? Where?
We have a dress code.
Where?
As a devotee, what to wear, what not to wear.
Oh.
So, if my attitude is, I don't care what people think, but I'll wear what I want, how do, I mean, you know, I'm just confused over there. How do we deal with it?
Well, I'm, what can I say? I doesn't sound like my department. But those who have the responsibility for dealing with that, they can say something gently. What more can I say?
Actually, I was just giving an example, but what is this attitude of being saying that I don't care?
It's the Wild Western attitude. I don't care what anyone thinks. I'm being, here's what they say, I'm being me. It's all about me. I'm doing me. There you have it. No social pressures, no social formulas, no restrictions, no moral codes, just be me. And no regrets. That is the advancement of civilization. In the barbaric days, people would have regrets. But now, a truly progressive human being just does it and has no regrets. Ah, that is the exalted status of civilization. That's the difference. But that madness is going worldwide. Someone could say to you, oh, you're concerned about these things because you're like a grandmother. What do you know about today's times? You don't know anything. You're from the old days with the Hindu granny wisdom. You're not ready for life today. Anything else? Yes, is that Adi Purusha Prabhu? I don't have my glasses on. Is that him?
Yeah.
Adi Keshava Prabhu.
This is about what you mentioned about prolonging happiness. Mm-hmm. So one sense, modern medicine is assuring us to prolong our life. There is so much of advancement, especially the imaging. Things which were not visible, now it's visible. So a person is healthy, but accidentally is diagnosed with something which he is not aware of, but because of the technology, they detect. And once they detect, they put a fear.
Yes.
That if you don't do this, there's a threat to your life. So my question is, if you cannot, I mean, the body anyway is going to perish, and same time we have said that this is Krishna's gift, we have to take care of it. We have to handle this. So now, how do we have faith in what they say? Because they speak from their experience that if you don't do this, this will happen. That means you are risking your life if you don't do this. But same time, we know that there is no assurance of, because they speak from what they perceive and whatever statistics they have. And the worst thing is, whatever you do, you intervene, it is actually causing more harm. So in this, I am specially speaking for devotees. Of course, I am not concerned about the outside world. So at that time, how do you take a decision? No, you should better you go for this. Or you said, no, I don't think we don't trust all these things. You should be more conservative. Forget about it.
It's a situation that requires counsel. You need medical counsel and spiritual counsel. And fortunately, at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, you get it all rolled together in one. But yes, it requires guidance. This body is going to be finished. For a devotee, you're meant to take care of your body for the sake of Krishna's service as much as you can. But then there can come a point where the devotee may think that this body is doomed from the beginning. The cure is worse than the disease. Or even the cure is so inconvenient that I'd rather just have some quality of life and leave it at that. So it requires guidance, counseling. What is the devotee's service and his view of the service? Can that service go on if that devotee would take the cure? Or does the devotee want to take the cure? Or he thinks it's going to be just bring about more problems? This requires expert guidance. But we can remember the fundamental axiom given by Shukadeva Goswami in the second canto of Bhagavatam. Kim pramatasya bahubi parokshar vairanar iha. What is the value of a long life prolonged if it's just full of inexperience, full of ignorance? Better a short life if there's just one moment of proper consciousness. So that's the fundamental guideline. What's the use in living long if you're just absorbed in ignorance? Better to live short, but have one moment, just one moment, of crystal clear Krishna consciousness. So we have a different way of looking at the whole situation. But then again, devotees, according to their level, have different realizations, different aspirations. Someone has a family. Besides their service to Krishna, they have a family. They want to be there for their family. All these motivations and practicalities have to be taken into account by expert advisors. So I'm sure that all those taking advice from you are grateful that you can help them handle such situations. I have heard from others. They're very grateful. So please continue. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
We would like to thank Maharaj for his profound scholarly presentation in a very witty and sweet manner. He has also shared this wisdom in his book, Hiding in Unnatural Happiness. So we are very grateful for Maharaj for visiting us at Govardhaniko Village and encouraging and enlightening us every time since the start. And we request him to please keep visiting us always. Thank you so much, Maharaj. Let us thank Maharaj by expressing our gratitude by loudly chanting three times.